Good morning, everybody. This is Solomon on Blast, and we are back this week as part of the Power Talk 1210.com live streaming internet radio family. You can find us there on PowerTalk1210.com, listen live button, or better yet, just get the PowerTalk 1210 app for your smartphone, iPhone, tablet, or whatever. If you do miss this live show, you can find it on our website, SolomonOnBlast.com, along with a lot of the other most recent shows. And we still can take calls if you want to call in. The number to do so is still the same, 520-750-7456. If you want to contact us, send us an email, solomon@solomononblast.com. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and all those other social media things that we're supposed to be updating and keeping track of here as we go into the high-tech internet radio realm. A couple weeks ago, we looked at dishonest weights and false scales and what the culture considers important versus the truth of what really is important. And we touched somewhat on what we said were the balanced scales of justice. So this week, I thought it would be good to go further into the concept of justice, especially in light of the passing of Supreme Court Justice and Scalia and the Supreme Court being in the news so much because of it. For the most part, even though it is one of the three main branches of the government, the Supreme Court and most of the cases it hears pretty much fly under the radar for the most of the time, especially in our culture. It doesn't show up in the news until there's a significant case that garners a lot of attention, or, as is the case now, when a new justice needs to be appointed. The justices don't get a lot of publicity either. In fact, there was a CNN political poll conducted by the American Council of Trustees and Alumni in August of last year and released in January of this year that concluded from 1,000 college graduates surveyed, almost 10% of them believe Judge Judy serves on the Supreme Court. So that doesn't say much for these so-called institutions of higher learning if they think just Judge Judy's on the Supreme Court. So the question is, just what is justice? And from the point of view of a court trial, you could think of it simply as acquitting the innocent and convicting the guilty. And when that happens, justice is done. And we have no problem understanding an injustice when a verdict is in opposition to the law or it doesn't even align with the known facts. So that's kind of the technical court view. But from the point of view of Solomon, justice is the principle of moral rightness or equity. After all, that was the whole reason he had asked for wisdom from God, so he could administer justice to the people of Israel when he became king. So it's equity we really look for in the definition of justice and the justice system. And no matter who you are, how much money you have, or any other factor, if the justice system is truly a just system, everyone is treated equitably. Unfortunately, that isn't always the case. Sometimes it's not intentional, but sometimes it is, because not everyone is out to do the right thing and see justice served with equity, especially in the confused culture we live in. Solomon, in his wisdom, clearly understood this, because he says in Ecclesiastes 3:16, "And I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there, and in the place of justice, wickedness was there." But when it comes to the Supreme Court, we hope that isn't the case. That's why the nomination and the confirmation of a new Supreme Court justice is getting so much attention. But really, justice is more than just a court and court cases and the outcome of those cases. It's also how we interact on a daily basis with others. The just person lives a life of equity and honesty in every aspect of their life. And just like the court systems, no matter who that person is or how much money they have or any other factor, if we're applying a just system, everyone's treated equitably. But that can be hard to do. We have our biases and our beliefs and our view of the different people we run into and interact with every day. And why else would there be websites like People of Walmart if everybody treated everybody equally? Real justice would require a site like People of Gucci or People of Saks or whatever. But it seems like it's usually the poor that get the brunt of the injustice. But I don't think that's changed because Solomon saw the same thing in Proverbs 29. He says, the righteous care about justice for the poor, but the wicked have no such concern. So it seems the poor have always been treated with less than an equitable approach, at least by the wicked, according to Solomon, and also a lot with a lot of what we see today. So the question is there justice for the poor? That's kind of the first question we'll go into as we go into this break. And I'm going to take a commercial break, and we'll be back. One of the things we haven't got working yet or haven't completed in the transfer is having some music and whatnot. So we'll play it by ear. Maybe Jackson will sing for us going into the break. But we'll take this break, and we'll be back with more of Solomon on Blast right after this.
Don't forget, you can listen to Power Talk 1210 anytime, anywhere with our free app for iPhones and Androids both.
Is this to be believed in our scientific age?
Just search Power Talk 1210 on iTunes or Google Play Store. It's a fast download, and you'll never have to leave home without us again. Power Talk 1210, KVT AM. Get the app.
Does it seem like your car is driving you around in circles? It probably is if you've been driving Tucson city streets and your car is out of alignment. If it is, then it's costing you money. Your tires wear out faster and you're spending more on gas. So what should you do? If you're wise, you call Mike Vance at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276. Mike's been in business in Tucson for over 25 years and has the experience to diagnose and fix that alignment problem right the first time. As the name says, though, he doesn't just do alignments. If you've got brake or suspension problems, or for that matter, just about any car problem, Mike has the expertise to fix it. As a longtime customer of Mike's, I assure you, he'll treat you with integrity and get you back on the road without running you around in circles. So give Mike a call at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276, and tell him Doug from Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210 sent you. It's the wisest thing you can do for all your car repair needs. Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276.
If you missed out on getting that first AR-15 at a great price on Black Friday, or during the Christmas rush, or if you just want another one, we have what you need. This week's specials at Diamondback are the Delton Sportlight AR-15 carbine in 5.56 caliber with a 16-inch barrel and 130-round magazine. While they last, $100 off, only $499.99. Or, if an AK-style rifle is what you're looking for, Century Arms PAP M90NP is also on sale, $100 off, now only $649.99. It's in 5.56 caliber, but 18.5 5-inch barrel and 130-round magazine. This one uses the standard AR-15 style magazine. We also have all the accessories in stock too. PPU M19355 grain FMJ ammo at $6.99 for 20 rounds. Optics from Bushnell, Lucid, and Vortex starting at $99.99. Savings of $20, $30, up to $50 on red dots and scopes. Magpul Gen 2 Black 30-round mags, $11.99. Diamondback Shooting Sports is open every day at 7030 East Broadway at Colebro. Give us a call, 886-8338. And be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at dbackshootingsports.com.
Play that clip for me, Jackson. We're back with more of Solomon on Blast. Gotta get Jackson to play this clip.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So that's really what we're trying to take a look at today, is liberty and justice for all. And the question was, you know, is there justice for the poor from the highest court in the land? Well, my question would be, well, I think it depends on how you view who the poor are, and whether or not the judgments that come from the Supreme Court are really always just judgments. Who are the poor? Some of us believe, I think, a lot of times that it's always about that little guy fighting the big corporate behemoth that doesn't care about anything but money. But I think it's more than that a lot of times, Fred, and I think we forget that it's not always just that view of justice being served.
Well, I think it has much to do with the poor in that the disadvantaged in any society are the people that are going to be most vulnerable when it comes to adjudicating some kind of misunderstanding or some legal conflict. So, and here's, I think, the important idea of that verse is that people that are poor obviously don't have the same recourse that people who have money and influence have. And when justice really breaks down to its worst form, it's when the people on the poor are crushed. It becomes very Darwinian, you know? The survival of the fittest, and the people that don't have the ability to compete, then it doesn't matter what's right or wrong, what's true, what's not true. They're going to lose most of the time. Now, what's important to understand about this, though, Doug, is that the purpose of a judge is not to create law or to stimulate the economy.
Right.
The purpose of a judge is simply to adjudicate a conflict fairly, like you're saying, with equity. So I do believe that he's talking about real poor people in the sense, in the classic sense, but that judges, their job is not to do anything other than give them a fair shot as they adjudicate the law over a certain conflict or situation, right? I mean,
right.
It's in when that's not happening, then society really is becomes a very unjust place. They're, merely because they are the most vulnerable people in society. I think that's the point.
Yeah, and when you look at the history behind our Constitution, you can go back to the Magna Carta. One of the statements made in that document was, to no one will we sell, to no one will we deny or delay right or justice. And that was used when it came to developing the U.S. Constitution and the laws here.
Yeah, and referencing the English
Magna Carta.
Magna Carta.
Right. So
I always remember when the Magna Carta was signed because it was during lunchtime at 12:15. So it always stuck in my head. It was signed in 1215.
Oh, the year in which it was signed. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, you would.
I always remembered it because okay. It was lunchtime.
It was lunchtime. All right. So it really isn't about equality that our culture seems to think everything needs to be about, but it's about equity, and I think that's what the aspect that Solomon is pointing out here is, there, no matter whether you're poor or rich or anything, there has to be equity in how justice is done. Otherwise, you end up with tyranny and a lack of belief that there is anything that can be.
Well, I mean, even let's be honest,
justly.
Even today's society, a poor person is not as competitive when it comes to being acquitted of an allegation that a rich person is in, because that for the sake that they can buy a better lawyer, you know, you get appointed, an attorney by the state, and the chances are he's eating lunch with the prosecutor, and your case is pretty low on the docket, and they might make a few deals over a sandwich, you know, and it may not come out really good for you. My dad used to have a saying. He'd say, if you're in trouble, get a lawyer. If you're guilty, get a good lawyer.
Yeah.
So, it kind of works out like that. If you have the ability to afford a better lawyer, you're going to get better justice, so to speak.
Yeah. And now, you made the comment about the two lawyers were probably having lunch together. There was actually a study done back in 2010 in Israel, and they studied what judges, how they ruled, or actually it was a parole panel, and how the people on that parole panel, which were judges, how they ruled cases depending on what time of the day it was. So if they just came in, had their breakfast and everything, and were ruling, typically the rulings for parole were more favorable. By the time lunchtime rolled around, the percentages of those that were getting positive rulings for their parole was down to zero. And then it would peak again at lunchtime, and by the end of the day or the mid-afternoon, it was almost down to zero. And afternoon break, it went back up, and a higher percentage. And by the end of the day, nobody was getting paroled. So the thought was a lot of it had to do with what was in their stomach and how hungry or tired they were. And so that kind of points out that, you know, sometimes justice might not be done the way you expect it to
be. Well, it's the human factor. It's the human element. It's like in baseball. One of the big debates going on right now is how much do they really want television involved in the calling of balls and strikes. So, you know, now that you can catch everything in slow motion. Yeah. And they're saying, well, maybe the human element is an important part of the game, you know. And do you really, you know, it's not like baseball is something where you want to add another 20 minutes to discuss whether that was a ball or a strike. Baseball moves slow enough, you know, and I'm a baseball fan, but, you know, it moves slow enough. So at some point you have to realize these are just human beings trying to do a job to the best of their ability. I think the point here is anybody who's in authority has to take their, as a judge, has to take their responsibilities ethically very, very seriously, because really, at the end of the day, they're the umpire. And whether or not we continue to be a nation of ruled by law is to a great degree we're going to be determined on what the integrity of these people use.
Right, and Solomon points that out. Proverbs 18, he says, it is not good to be partial to the wicked and so deprive the innocent of justice. And I think when we look at what's going on with regards to the commentary about whether or not the president can appoint somebody at this point in time and whether or not the Senate's going to do anything about it, it really gets down to the point that who gets appointed and who's sitting on that has a big impact long term, probably more so than who the president is, for the justice that we expect to be served. Because the Supreme Court is the highest court in the land, supposedly, and you can't go any higher when it comes to getting a judgment. So we've seen it over the last few years, things like the defense of marriage issue or the Obamacare issue. A lot of that has created quite a bit of controversy, and it's based on those nine people making their decisions.
Yeah, well, the Supreme Court has been hyper politicized in the last 2 decades. And if you remember going back to the hearings for Judge Thomas and the whole Anita Hill debacle and arguing over, you know, the statement of a hair on a Pepsi can or whatever it was, a Coke can, and that was just a brutal attempt to destroy this man for the simple purpose of a political expedience. And he ended up, Judge Thomas obviously was approved, but I mean, from there there's been so much rancor you know, it's been so polarized since then that, right, what we see today is a result of all of that. And you're talking about these issues. It doesn't matter what the law says anymore. It doesn't even matter. What matters is what political side of the aisle they're on. And they're using their platform in order to promote a political theory and agenda. And I think that's the way it looks. And so coming into this, the last thing we want right now is somebody on the Supreme Court that's just there for a mere political appointment to completely do an end around of the Constitution and just try to promote a political agenda. And I think that's the death of the court.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, do you think that's going to be the case when it comes to who Obama appoints? Is that it's going to be one of those people that are way out there on the left cause the court to swing the other way?
Well, according to the Constitution, Obama has every right to nominate
absolutely
someone to replace Justice Scalia. The Senate has the right to do whatever they want to do with that nomination.
They can confirm them. They cannot confirm them.
They don't have to listen. They can table it. And they, you know, so both sides have to do their part
right
in all of this. So you can't just blame Obama for doing what he's going to do. You know, he has every constitutional right to nominate somebody.
But
there's no question in my mind the person he's going to nominate is going to be like the last two, Kagan and Sotomayor, which are just, they're just basically taking orders.
But what if he didn't? What if he nominated somebody that was more central, not a left, not a right, but more of a centrist type judge? Do you think that that would possibly get through the Senate and they would have who they wanted in there?
That would be a curveball, but who knows? Justice Roberts was a curveball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, George W. put him in with the assumption that this guy was going to be a strict constitutionalist, and then comes to Obamacare, which did not cut the mustard of law, and he rewrote it to make it a law, called it a tax.
Right.
And so ironic, the very next day, out of the same conversation, Obama, he rejoiced over his Supreme Court victory, and then he said it wasn't a tax, almost at the same time, which the only reason it won is because Justice Roberts
claimed it,
reformatted the whole bill as a tax.
Right.
You feel like you're getting this kind of stuff makes you dizzy after a while and makes you really maybe just not pay attention anymore.
Well, the thing is, like I said, it's going to have much longer term effects than who the next president is going to be, I think, as to who's going to sit on that court. Right now, with Scalia gone, it's probably fairly balanced at a 4-4, conservative versus a more liberal view of things. Just looking at some of the older cases that have come through there and their rulings on them, you can pretty much see that there's 4 or 5 there on one side and 4 or 5 on the other, depending on the case. But the conservative side was effectively a 5-4 balance in the Supreme Court. Now, if it's balanced out 4-4 without Scalia, and you put in somebody that's going to be a more central type judge, then maybe the balance is still there and the impact isn't as bad for the long term versus Obama putting in somebody that might be a very left-wing one and the court swings very far to the left and doesn't look at the Constitution like it's supposed to be doing.
Well, I think the thing we're missing with Scalia was he was more than a vote. He was probably, they called him the lion of the court.
Mm-hmm.
He had intellectual powers of persuasion, and he had the ability to affect the other justices, I'm sure, when they were deliberating over these cases. So they're not only just going to miss his vote; they're going to miss his powers of persuasion, and I think that is going to be missed, maybe even more than his vote, his ability to speak to the other justices about these issues and argue these points. You know,
right. Because a lot of it is about the arguments that are put forth and how they get adjudicated in terms of decisions and whatnot. So if Obama's really looking to have his appointment or his nomination confirmed, he would put somebody in the center, and that's more of a central person.
Which
because otherwise,
I think would be a big victory for the Democrats. To get a centrist pass.
I think so too, but I think it would be the best way that he could get somebody in there that would get confirmed, and then the Republicans wouldn't look like the bad people for not, letting justice be done.
It doesn't matter what they do. They're going to end up looking that way.
I agree. Now, we're going to have to take our hard break at the half hour, but we'll come back after some commercial breaks and continue the discussion with maybe it's all about justice for me instead.
Guess who just won Best Pizza of Tucson? Chariot Pizza. Chariot Pizza has two locations, 3930 North Flowing Wells Road and 1835 South Alvinon Way. Chariot Pizza is home of the world-famous large one-topping pizza for $10.99. Chariot Pizza also offers takeout for all of its delicious items on the menu, so this way you can enjoy Chariot Pizza's outstanding Italian food in the comfort of your own home. That's Chariot Pizza, home of the Italian food reminiscent of Italy and voted Best Pizza of Tucson. Can you tell me the name of one of the most distinctive resorts in Tucson that offers a variety of suites and rooms, providing guests with spectacular scenic views of the desert as well as the mountains? Any ideas? Well, here's a hint. Amazing cuisine and beautiful horses. That's right, you guessed it, Tanque Verde Ranch. Come make some cool memories. Visit TankaVerdeRanch.com for questions on accommodations, Dude Ranch activities, and restaurant hours. TankaVerdeRanch.com.
Proud member of the Tucson Originals.
All right, we're back with more of Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. If you want to listen later on, we'll have the show up on SolomonOnBlast.com and possibly a link there off of PowerTalk1210.com. So we're talking about justice, and like I said, Solomon said that we really are kind of looking at it from, is there justice for the poor and not justice for just the wicked? Which Solomon's comment, the righteous care about justice for the poor, but the wicked have no such concern. I think what he's also talking about there is that a lot of times we have a tendency to be very, very demanding with regards to justice when it applies to our situation, but for our benefit. But on the other side of the equation, that if it's not for our benefit, but in response to something that we should be have justice done for, we don't want to have justice done then, right? We're looking for maybe a little bit more of the mercy side of the court when we're looking at that aspect.
And even when you're talking about justice for the poor, a lot of people view justice basically not as just making right judgments as to what the truth is. People use the word justice today to describe how they feel like they need a bit of a break. Society needs to offer them, you know, some kind of compensation or some kind of break, some kind of entitlement.
Right.
You know, one of the phrases you hear connected to justice now is social justice. And somehow that's supposed to be a superior form of justice. But in reality, I mean, how can you get better than justice?
Yeah.
So you end up modifying it,
right,
and changing its meaning now. Now what really matters is not what's right or wrong or what really took place according to the law's ability to discern it. Now it's about, well, it doesn't really matter what's right or wrong. What's matter is, this happened, you know, 200 years ago. This is the precedent.
Right.
And we need to, you know, again,
put the scales back in balance.
Yeah.
Even though that happened.
Yeah, we need to put the scales back in balance by using dishonest scales today.
Right.
Kind of thing.
And I, the one thought I had with regards to that social justice was, you know, when people avoid or ignore that God is the source of all law and justice, then they go out there and look for social justice. But when you realize that God is the source, you really are looking for a just society.
But even what are you saying? Even when they say social justice, they're admitting a departure from justice, right?
Right, exactly. It's
what if you said business justice? Well, what do you mean by business justice? Well, you know, people that are in business really have to pay a little extra price, a lot of risk involved. People go bad on debts, so let's lean the court in their favor a little bit, because, you know, to be in business, right, takes it's quite a challenge,
right?
And that's the reality for most. I know they think that the corporations are just, you know, getting away with murder, and many of them do, usually through the government. But we're talking about just regular business folks and all the things they have to do to make a living and to pay insurances and to, you know, workman's comp and whatnot. Well, let's have business justice, you know?
Right.
And you can go anywhere you want with that kind of thinking.
Right. And Bastiat in the law would say that's perverting justice, you know, that we've perverted the law, changed it. And the problem, he says, that occurs when you do that is it erases from everyone's conscience the distinction between justice and injustice. And so then, when we do feel that we have injustice, we rebel against the laws because we feel we're a victim of that situation. And, you know, when you rebel against that, then you have no justice at all.
Right. You have anarchy and nihilism because Nobody trusts, you know, that. What happens when you feel like the umpire's on the take?
Yeah, you know? Everybody in the game is hollering at the umpire and turning.
And they lose control. They lose control over the game itself. The you know, people aren't as disciplined in their actions, and they start fighting with each other, and it becomes a really ugly scene. And that's what starts happening when people do not sense that justice is important anymore. And so I don't care what side of an issue you're on, you got to be really careful. When you start modifying justice, you start undermining it.
Right.
And when you undermine it, what do you have that's better than justice?
Well, you have anarchy, and that definitely isn't better than justice by any sense.
But it's good to compare these two points. On one hand, Solomon is saying that poor people do get the raw end of the deal much of the time when it comes to justice.
Right.
But there's also, I don't have it in front of me, but in the Law of Moses, he makes it very clear that acquitting the guilty person just because they're poor is not justice either.
Right.
He said that's just as unjust as convicting them when they're innocent. There's no advantage to society whatsoever to side with a guilty poor person. Yeah, that would maybe be a different eating food, but he's talking about in the terms of crime. You know, going back to the law, just to answer Jackson, he doesn't have a mic in front of him right now. He said, what about eating food? Well, the Law of Moses had a contingency to where all the farmers had to allow people to walk through their property and eat at will. So it was actually in the law that you could go to any property as long as you didn't go with a big bag.
Right. And it was
at harvest. You could eat whatever you wanted to eat. That was also in the law.
The things that weren't, that fell on the edges of the fields and whatnot.
That's the whole story of Ruth.
Right. So, and one of the things you look at, when you look back at Israel, the laws and whatnot, a lot of times those that committed those crimes became indebted to the person that they committed the crime against. And they had to pay retribution back to that person specifically because that was the person that was harmed. Today, I'm wondering, do we really have a more just system today when somebody that goes out and steals ends up in jail and all of society has to pay that person's debt back because we're the ones that are paying for the time for that person to sit in jail and all the expenses and everything else?
How much does it cost a year, do you think? Hold somebody in jail.
I don't know, but if you consider that aspect alone, do we really have a more just system today than maybe the Israelites had when slavery was the right approach to dealing with having committed a crime against somebody? Because that person that's sitting in jail isn't really paying back. You know, a lot of times they'll say, well, he got out of jail because he paid back his debt to society.
$60,000.
Okay, so $60,000. And who ends up paying for that? The taxpayers, we do as individuals, and they say, well, he paid his debt to society because he went to prison and now he's out. Well, did he pay his debt? No, I think everybody else that is paying taxes and whatnot is paying that debt. So it's a little bit of a different look at, you know, is there really justice being done? Especially for the poor, because the poor are also out there in some cases having to pay the taxes to support the
well,
penal system.
How many poor people get absolutely paralyzed by the whole traffic court system? I mean, it's an astonishing thing. I mean, you meet some young guys; they owe $4,000, $2,500. They can't get to work. I mean, there's something about it that's out of control that I don't think it's right.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is, you know, going back to maybe the just being guilty over being stupid or maybe whatever. But somewhere their whole lives are on hold because now they can't even work and they're, you know, 22, 23 years old and they can't even work. They got to take the bus just because they owe the traffic court a certain amount of money. Something about that to me is really wrong in how it's applied. And maybe it's easier said than done, but They've got to find a way around that to get these guys the ability to get to work and do what they got to do, and
they
pay off this debt.
There is no justice involved with that. You basically, the fines pile up faster than anybody can pay them, and they put you into a situation where, you know, they suspend your license for something that was maybe a $100 fine,
right?
And now you can't get to work, and if you do drive, you're going to get.
It's just not
over.
Commensurate for the original crime of going through a red light.
Right, exactly. I know people that it was 12 years or more that they hadn't had a driver's license because of those kind of situations. So,
and these are the kinds of things we're talking about. When you're talking about justice, you do have to remember there's certain people that are more vulnerable than other people.
Right.
And I think you have to keep that in mind. I really do think that a lot of kids from the inner city, too many kids are in jail. I realize they commit crimes. I know that. But somewhere you have to stop and say, this is not working very well here. We're going to have to find a way to stimulate this system in another direction. For example, I know, you know, all the people for the free market, and I believe in the capitalism. But there's also a point where capitalism has to be regulated by monopoly laws. Mm-hmm. And antitrust laws, or else it will get out of control and a handful of people are going to rule everybody like an oligarchy. So it's to the benefit of the whole to regulate how far the free market can go. Right. And I say justice is the same way. There's a point where you have to step in and say, okay, it's not working. It's not working. All these poor people are suffering under this system, not because they're horrible criminals, but because, like a lot of young people, make a lot of dumb decisions in life. But if you come from a better family, your chances of bouncing back are way better.
Right.
You know, you do a lot. There's a lot of people that do dumb things and recover. If you just read a little bit about Peyton Manning, was a pretty outrageous kid at a certain point in his early college career, and without going into all of that.
But he had resources behind him.
Yeah, he had a father that he was an all-pro football player, and he had, you know, a big career in front of him. So, I mean, there's other advantages that people have in order to deal with their peccadilloes, is what I'm saying.
Right.
Poor people don't have those advantages.
And, you know, the aspect of how the court systems with regards to the license and simple traffic fines and whatnot is just a small picture of the bigger picture when, as individuals, we're going up against the federal government. Because at that level, how do you really have the resources needed to fight against the federal government? Unlimited resources on their side can put you into a world of hurt. There's same kind of situations where somebody gets stopped for something. You can find this information out there, how these police departments are confiscating things just under the guise of they think that you're either running drugs or you're illegal money laundering or whatever, and just innocent people are having their lives turned upside down and not being able to get their property back or anything else, and have to go and fight the courts without any resources.
Okay, I've got a good justice and liberty question for you. What's going on right now with Apple?
Oh.
Okay, yeah. So they're refusing to break into the phone of one of the phones of the San Bernardino terrorists.
Right.
And they're claiming that if they create a back door, this will give just about anybody access.
Yeah, I think
to the iPhone.
It sounds like their issue is that if they give the ability to unlock this phone, that then that could potentially be used for any other phone. And my thought is, well, then let Apple do it themselves, and maybe they could have supposedly prior to the Apple ID being changed.
So I guess the big question of all of this is whether or not they have to create a piece of technology for all iPhones. And that's kind of how it's being explained to us, right? Because he's automatically putting into the discussion the fact that it could happen to anybody. So, you know, to be honest with you, I don't really understand all the nuances of the technology. But the point is, you know, you're talking about people's privacy in general versus a very important case where there might be other terrorist attacks, potential attacks linked to this information, and just to let that happen for the sake of saying philosophically there's a greater issue here. My question is, can they unlock that phone without putting a back door in every Apple phone?
Basically, do they have a master key that can unlock that one, but not
in particular?
Yeah, at this point, I don't know if that's really the case, or whether Apple's really standing on grounds of just principle to try and avoid this thing.
Or someone has brought up the point, maybe they themselves are afraid of terrorist backlash against Apple.
Oh, for allowing this
around the world.
That could happen.
Or maybe Muslim governments that may feel that it's hostile.
But my thought was that at a higher level, when you've got a system in place like obviously our federal government at this point in time, where they're in reality, there's a lot of socialism associated with the way the federal government operates. How do you, as an individual, really have justice served when the laws themselves don't allow that to occur? I mean, that is the system. Our federal legal system is it, right? Supreme Court is the last straw, but if the laws are set up where you don't have any way of getting over that,
in other words, what do we do when we have unjust laws?
Yeah. I mean, that's what we were kind of trying to get to, was how do we get it so that we do have...
I think that's what the Second Amendment's for, isn't it?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the reasons it's there. And Scalia was on that court when they made the decision that the Second Amendment really was for the individual. And I think that's one of the big, probably will be one of his biggest legacies, is that case came before them, and he was the one that helped turn that into a situation where it was an individual right. There's a lot going on out there in terms of, you know, who is going to be selected for the Supreme Court position and everything else that ties into it. But I think from an individual basis, we really don't have much of a way to overcome that large government system. And like I said at the beginning, a lot of times people think the poor and it's fighting the big corporation. Well, I think there's a much, much bigger problem with justice being served when it's we as individuals having to fight against a government tyranny or a government socialistic view of the laws being and the way they're implemented.
I think what's really important right now in this phase of American history is that we recalibrate to the Constitution, to the basic ideals of the Constitution, and it was created in such a way that each part of it, you know, divided in thirds, the executive branch and the judicial branch and the Supreme Court, that all of these doing their job keeps the other in balance.
Right. And I think
they cannot become over-friendly, right? They need to have, each has to be, to rigorously do their job. And if they don't, then the system begins to collapse into what they feared the most. Tyranny was the bad word.
Right.
To the framers of the Constitution.
And that's
what
we're
hoping. Worse word than that.
We can keep away from. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more of Solomon on Blast right after these commercial messages.
You are listening to Power Talk 1210, the power to think for yourself.
Does it seem like your car is driving you around in circles? It probably is if you've been driving Tucson city streets and your car is out of alignment. If it is, then it's costing you money. Your tires wear out faster and you're spending more on gas. So what should you do? If you're wise, you call Mike Vance at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276. Mike's been in business in Tucson for over 25 years and has the experience to diagnose and fix that alignment problem right the first time. As the name says, though, he doesn't just do alignments. If you've got brake or suspension problems, or for that matter, just about any car problem, Mike has the expertise to fix it. As a longtime customer of Mike's, I assure you, he'll treat you with integrity and get you back on the road without running you around in circles. So give Mike a call at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276, and tell him Doug from Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210 sent you. It's the wisest thing you can do for all your car repair needs. Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276.
Okay, we're back with Solomon on Blast for the last segment here. And I think what Fred was saying, he had to leave. He wasn't feeling too well. So we'll continue here in the last segment. One of the things that Fred was talking about was the, you know, who really, we have to have a setup where we go back to more of a constitutional aspect. And there was an article that I found, and this particular lady was one of Scalia's interns or clerks back when he was on the Supreme Court. And she said that her viewpoint was he was one of the greatest thinkers, analysts, and writers ever to sit on the high court, and also was a warm, generous person. She feels that his most important and enduring contribution was to reestablish the view that the Constitution is a form of law, that its meaning, like that of other legal texts, is knowable, that understanding it means starting with reading what it says, and that the job of judges is to read it, figure it out, and follow it. And in contrast to back before, or when he had joined the Supreme Court, a lot of the law school professors and justices almost uniformly believed that no person of even ordinary intelligence could hold such a naive view. And rather, they proclaimed that the Constitution's meaning was largely indeterminate, that the justices themselves created its meaning, and that Scalia really changed that when he came onto the court. She writes that when one of the nation's most powerful intellects and one of the greatest writers to ever sit on the Supreme Court took the view that the Constitution was a law, when he made arguments based on the Constitution's original meaning, and when he demolished arguments based on other considerations, the impact was huge.
Doug,
and it's changed the entire legal conversation.
This is Jake Feinberg.
Good morning, Jake.
Hey, Doug. Nice to see you. PowerTalk1210.com. Everyone should download the app for Solomon on Blast and the Jake Feinberg Show. Doug, the reality is that Scalia was an intellectual titan, whether you agreed with him or not. But he passed away. Clarence Thomas is in his 80s. Ruth Bader Ginsburg's in her 80s. Are you really petrified of a liberal court? Because I guess what I'm looking at, I heard you guys talking over yourselves about this injustice of this problem in the justice system. I have a good relationship with Mayor Rothschild. He walks into the federal court building every Monday, and he sees judges with their head in their hands. These are conservative judges,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Because conservative legislators, people that supposedly are conservative, put together these things called mandatory minimums, okay? Meaning you need to, even if you do something incredibly, I don't know how to say this.
Stupid.
Stupid, right?
But what I'm saying is,
I mean, so they are now locked into mandating these sentences, penalizing people in a very punitive fashion, and basically destroying their life. To me, we don't need, the other thing, I'll let you riff on this, in private business, in sports, in education, we are always evolving, okay? There's a problem with the NFL and violence. They outlaw head hits,
yeah.
Okay? Businesses are always doing whatever they can to save money. You look at the New York Yankees, okay? They don't want, but my point is, the Constitution needs to evolve as well. And I just wonder if you ever will be willing to budge on that, because to be honest with you, some of the crises we're in right now is, in my mind, is not going to be because we have to roll it back. We have to move forward into a new century. I'm not saying we demolish the Constitution. I'm saying it has to evolve just like every other sector of our society. And if not, we will atrophy and ultimately crumble away. Because what I hear you guys talking about is that we are in a crisis, and I agree with you.
Well, I think, you know, if you have to really look at it big picture, and yeah, there's a lot of talk about equality and everything else, but you have to ask, how can equality be legally enforced without liberty being legally destroyed and justice being legally trampled underfoot effectively, right? That's really the question, is you can't go out there and legally enforce equality without destroying all of the other things. And like I said at the beginning, what we're really looking for is equity. Mm-hmm. Equity in the decision process.
But they don't have any flexibility, right? Because of the bandit, right?
Absolutely. And in that aspect of it, I agree.
Yeah.
Some of these laws that everything has unintended consequences, and that's what you find out after the fact. Maybe they're trying to do something right, but in the end, after the fact, the unintended consequences show up.
And you made a good point, because people like yourself, we may philosophically disagree, but you know how many resources are coming out of our pockets.
Absolutely.
Get these guys back into the, I mean, if they're violent thugs, that's one thing. But otherwise, I mean, equity, that's what you're talking about.
Right. And when I, to boil it down, you know, I think the key aspect of it is that we always have to go back to Solomon's wisdom. And for us, we always try and look at it from the aspect of Christ, Jesus Christ, and the